Good morning, and welcome to WDRT's Conversations. My name is Dina Eccles, and my guest today in studio is David Ware. Dave is an energy consultant. He and his wife, Tamsin, moved here from Minnesota in 1994, where he had been an energy auditor for about 2.5 years. In the 2000s, he retrained in Wisconsin through the Focus on Energy program to become a residential energy consultant. So we're here and to talk today about what is an energy consultant, and what have you been up to, Dave? So thanks for coming in.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so I'm happy to meet you. This is our first meeting, and to learn more a bit about what you do. So let's start from the top.
Okay. So residential energy auditing is taking existing homes, and I pressure test the home to determine the amount of air leakage. I relate that to the volume of the home so that I have some...
One second. Let's go back to what was the first thing you said? Energy test or...
It's a pressure test.
Pressure test.
Yes.
So what does that mean?
Okay. So that's using a blower door, which blows air out of the house, depressurizing the house, and it pulls it in through leaks. And it measures the amount, the volume of air, cubic feet per minute, going through the fan. And then you can relate that to the volume of the house to determine its leakage based on how large the house is.
Wow. Now, can cats be in the house when you're doing this?
Just not real close to the fan, although there, there is a screen on the fan to prevent their tails from getting sucked in. No, I've never had any issue with anything other than dust blowing through the fan, thank goodness.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. I had never heard of this.
Yeah, well, the fan itself produces a pressure of about the equivalent of a 20-mile-an-hour wind okay. on all sides of the house at the same time.
Now, a really old house, are you ever concerned that it might collapse?
No, never that kind of concern.
Because my house is 150 years old.
So. Oh, my goodness. Okay, right. I do usually find quite a bit of leakage in old houses, but occasionally I'm surprised, pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. Yeah, some of them have been built really well, yeah. Obviously, if they're still standing.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the first step.
Yes.
And then?
So in tandem with the blower door, I'm using an infrared camera. Mm-hmm. Which is something we didn't used to have when I started out. They existed, but they were large, clunky devices that cost many thousands of dollars. But now you can buy handheld ones, and so we use that. And what that does is it senses the temperature of the surfaces, and we usually use it on the interior of the house. It can be used on the exterior as well, but we're looking for the temperature difference of the leaking air. It's cooling. Usually we do it in cool weather when the outside is cooler than the inside. And it shows dark streaks of where the outside air is leaking in and cooling down the surfaces of the house.
Wow.
So hidden leaks are a lot easier to find when you have an infrared camera.
So you come in, it's kind of like Ghostbusters.
Yeah, in a way. Yeah. Hey, there's a ghost up there.
Right, so you come in with all of your things attached.
Yeah, my fancy doodads.
Wow. Okay. So what got you interested in this?
So when I was in college, back in the early 80s, I was trying to figure out, since I was... majoring in anthropology, philosophy, and political science, I knew that I wouldn't be making money in that that field, if there is such a field. So I had to think of, you know, how I was going to earn my keep in the world and what I wanted to do. And I'd always been interested in reducing our consumption. I'd seen the environmental nature of the human project on this earth. I had already been exposed to ideas that were explaining that we were consuming too much. Mm. And so I wanted to devote my efforts to reducing the amount that we consume. And at first, I was in a recycling program at the University of Minnesota. And, you know, recycling's good, but it wasn't going to put that much of a dent in our consumption. And eventually, I can't remember exactly how I went this direction, but I heard from someone, maybe I had a conversation with someone who was already an energy auditor, and realized, yeah, I could reduce the amount our homes consume. Mm. So that's when I got trained and started doing that.
Oh, that is a very personal approach.
Yeah.
And I love that you are interested in conservation, and because that is key. I mean, it's good to recycle, you know. Mm-hmm. Like someone was telling me about how they're witnessing the oceans being cleaned up from all the tons of plastic that we keep. But, you know, it's like we need to start more at the front end. Someone told me one time, if you want to change the course of a river, how do you do it? What do you do? Mm-hmm. And, yeah, so, well, yeah, go ahead, throw it.
That's a good analogy, mm-hmm. The river.
So people have said all kinds of things, you know, mm-hmm. big boulders and, right?
Yeah.
One person said, throw yourself in the river.
Wow.
But the answer was, that the person gave was, just go to where, to the source of the river and put your finger there.
Okay.
So at least, so you're taking the path of least resistance.
Well, yeah, one kind of has to. Especially when the river is wide and deep and strong.
Right, exactly. You don't want to throw yourself in that.
No, Well, you're already in it, in a way. Mm. We are part of that river.
Mm. So what do you do when you go into a place and you see an amazing amount of energy waste?
Sometimes the energy waste is behavioral.
Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of what I was hinting to.
Yeah, people are making choices that are like, whoa, okay, you must have a lot of money because, oh, my goodness. And that is an issue. That's certainly a major issue, is what we choose to expend energy on,
mm-hmm.
and our attitudes about, our cavalier attitudes about what are often very wasteful practices in our society.
Give us an example.
Oh, my goodness. I don't want anyone listening to feel bad.
No, don't feel bad, but, you know,
well,
it is,
for example,
educational.
Sure. So using air conditioning when you don't have to.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some people just tune it in at their favorite temperature and don't want to have to do any work. And just let the system do it all for them. Mm-hmm. So the system might cycle between air conditioning and heating in a single day.
Correct.
And there are ways to get beyond that if you're willing to accept just a little bit of discomfort.
Yeah. It isn't necessarily discomfort if you're allowing your body to do, you know, things that it doesn't,
sure.
You know, if we can just make everything homeostatic, good luck.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
that takes a lot of energy.
Right, it does.
Yeah.
And I think it's not about people feeling bad. I think because we've been trained into this.
Sure.
You know, we've been trained into this seeking comfort thing.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And people should be comfortable. That's,
yeah.
But there's other ways of doing it too.
Yeah.
Like in my 150-year-old house, we don't have an air conditioner.
Yeah.
Because we have trees.
Oh, okay.
You know, we have the windows. We can open the windows and catch a breeze. And we haven't put cement everywhere around the house to gather heat.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I was even reading, someone sent me an article about rooftops, painting rooftops white.
White, yeah.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. In fact, I have a friend who has a business that does that, although they mainly do it for businesses, you know, for large
mm-hmm.
buildings.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's become a big thing, apparently, to reflect sun, to reduce air conditioning load.
Right. So there's simple things like that that
yeah.
we could be doing.
Yeah. Yeah, I know with our house, so you had asked what I see
right.
when I come in. And with the air conditioning thing, much like what you do, it sounds like, my wife and I have never had air conditioning, and
mm-hmm.
we have 100 110-year-old, 112-year-old house.
Okay.
And we just open windows at night. And we have put a box fan in one window, so it's using 20, 30, 40 watts.
Mm-hmm.
And it blows air out, sucks air in, cold air in, cool air. This is all assumes that the night actually gets cool enough. If it's an 80-degree night, you're out of luck.
Or if you're living in Texas right now.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. But around here, we very rarely have really warm nights. So if it gets below 70 in the 60s is pretty typical, 50s even, you're sucking in all that cold air. And then first thing in the morning before the sun hits the windows, shut everything down, put down the blinds, and the house stays in the 70s, 60s all day long.
Right.
And that's just, I don't know how much that saves. I haven't tried to add it up. But if we had air conditioning going, it would easily save $40, $50, $60 a month.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, these are the things that, again, we've been trained away from.
Exactly.
And, you know, a lot of us, you know, we're sitting here in Viroqua right now, and, you know, there's a lot of cement, and the houses are close together, and maybe it's a whole different ball game.
Yeah.
So what other ways are people maybe able to reconsider their energy use?
Well, one of the ways is what I have been trained to work in and what my business was in is to actually change the qualities of your home. And that's where the air leakage and the insulation levels come in. And for most homes these days, the insulation part has been already taken care of about as much as it can be reasonably, you know, without adding 2 inches of foam to the outside of your house, that kind of thing. So it's usually air leakage, and that takes care of the infrastructure. Your home is just going to be, no matter what your behavior is, your home will be doing better than if it hadn't been altered like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first thing, is to kind of take away or just do the part that doesn't relate to human behavior, because this house is going to be around a lot longer than the tenants usually. Mm-hmm. And tenants are going to change in behavior. So that's why I paid attention to the actual homes. In terms of behavior, that's kind of the sky's the limit on that one. I mean, some people go off grid, they give up their cars, they figure out, they move closer to where they work, or they these days work remotely on their computer. There are all kinds of ways to reduce our impact, our consumption.
So you've been doing this for quite a while now.
I have, yeah.
So do you see, are more of us moving in that direction, would you say?
I must say,
come on, be hopeful.
Yeah, I know. she can see my face. It was actually fairly depressing for me starting out this type of work back in the 80s when we had a certain level of consumption.
Mm-hmm.
I was tracking electric and gas use. And, you know, I would, after 2 years of doing that up in Minneapolis, I was trying to discern what my impact, and I was just recommending things. I wasn't actually doing much for them, but I was recommending, mm-hmm. and seeing if that had made an impact. And it had a slight impact. But since then, every once in a while, I check in on what the average American uses in electricity per month. And it's just gone up. It's kind of like with cars. Mm-hmm. They made them more efficient. And what did we do? We increased the size of the engines and the cars.
Mm.
And it was a big waste. And so I can't say I'm all that hopeful for our culture, our society, our civilization, until we run up against the limits and everyone starts to feel them.
And I think that might be happening.
It might be happening. I think people in Texas are going, what can I do?
Yeah. I feel so much for not just Texas, it's happening all over the world.
Yeah, everywhere.
So to make this connection, because, you know, we just walk into a room and flip a switch and the light comes on and you don't think about where did that energy come from? You know, and what it takes and what it's doing to the earth, wherever that might be. And that's a whole other conversation. I'm glad to hear that we can talk about it in this way, because I wasn't sure what all you would, having not met you,
right,
and not really understanding the role of energy consultant, understanding it more now. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's go back to that practical stuff for people's homes. Mm-hmm. So you would be like blowing in insulation? Like what then, what steps would people take? Like literally, what would they do?
Yeah. So the energy auditor, I or anyone else, would create a report. And the report is usually not incredibly detailed, because in air leakage, there can be so many different ways that air is leaking in. And that would be an awful lot of explanation of how to seal things. And most people aren't going to do it themselves, but there's a subset of people who will take it on themselves. For those people, I would recommend these days, thank goodness, you can go online and get all kinds of video tutorials. Just keep researching. Don't take the first one and only that one, but look at a whole bunch of stuff as to how to seal the type of home you have, what you might be looking for in that home. Now, at this point, you've already had an auditor explain what the main leakage sites are and usually give some indication as to how to seal those. Excuse me. So then you would study up on how to do that, and then you'd gird yourself for working up in attics in your home. That's the hard part, is for people to go into those parts of their homes that are nasty. But for most people, they're not going to be doing it themselves. So for those people, they would look for a professional. I wouldn't just get your average handy person, to do it for you, because they may or may not have any training whatsoever in sealing these kinds of things. And some of them might just want the money and the gig, the job. And so they'll say, yeah, sure, I can do that. And they may or may not do it well. So
what are some of the hazards that people might run into?
If your home was insulated originally with vermiculite, that vermiculite may have come from a place in Montana where, when they scooped out the vermiculite, asbestos, a layer of asbestos was overlaying it.
Wow.
And may have spilled into it.
So what years would that be?
Oh, boy.
Roughly.
Yeah, roughly the 1920s to 40s.
Okay. Is when. My house is older.
Okay, right, right. Your house probably had nothing in it, or maybe some newspapers originally. Those are some of the hazard. That's one hazard. Mm-hmm. Another hazard is just, in doing the work, you're on your knees, you're squatting, you got to protect your joints, and definitely wear a respirator face mask.
Right.
Because that's the main thing, is you're breathing dust. All that insulation that's up there, you're going to breathe it. Any bat guano, any bird poop, anything like that, you're going to be breathing some of that. Mouse poop, this is not good stuff to breathe. Which is why I got out of it after 5 years of intense work.
Yeah, but it's tough.
Yeah, and it may also be why people charge so much to go up into your attic
course,
and do that work.
No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to welcome listeners. We are Conversations on WDRT. My name is Dina Eccles, and my guest this morning is David Ware, and he's a local energy consultant. And we've been talking about what an energy consultant does and how to look at your home to see if it could be more energy reliable.
Efficient.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you. So I hope you're enjoying this conversation, and we'll just carry on. So, Dave, those are the hazards.
A couple of them. Yep.
That's a lot. So it makes sense to...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do have to protect yourself when you're in those areas. The other types of spaces you may have to go to are crawl spaces, those little 2 or 3 foot crawl spaces underneath an addition kind of thing. So you're crawling around in dirt.
Yeah, is it good to have a layer of plastic in a crawl space?
That is the usual accepted treatment. It depends on how often you flood. because if that space floods a lot, then having a layer of plastic isn't really doing much. Mm-hmm. But usually that layer of plastic is to reduce the amount of moisture,
right,
coming up from the ground. Even though it may seem like dry dirt, there's constant wicking moisture coming from that. And that can condense in the winter on all kinds of surfaces and cause havoc over the years. Mm-hmm. I've been in some crawl spaces where nothing bad had happened over 100 years, you know, and then other ones where they had dry rot on all of the framing members, and they had mold issues of other sorts. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the thick plastic on the ground and attached to the, usually sprayed with foam, to the existing walls.
So everybody living in really old houses now are thinking maybe we should just move into a tent, something, make it smaller. I mean, that's another thing. The houses are built now so large that they have to, you know. I heard that in Minnesota they make bedrooms have to be a certain size. Have you heard this?
Yeah, there are building codes about the size of bedrooms and the amount of ventilation that has to be possible in them. I'm not very familiar with all the building codes, but yeah, and egresses, and you know, there are all kinds of regulations that can affect the energy use of a home, and just super large homes. That's another trend.
People. It's like, are you thinking here? What are you thinking about? You're going to pay the mortgage, but can you pay the heating bills?
Yeah,
or the whatever you need,
and the re-roofing bills on something.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, it's just curious. So this is all very interesting. In focus on energy is the Wisconsin, what would you call it?
It's the funding for it that I know of. There may be some state funding that I don't know of, but mostly comes from the ratepayers of gas, of larger utilities, so gas and electric utilities that have, some of them have to be in the system or participate in the program, and others elect to, like Vernon Electric elected to. Mm-hmm. They don't have to. So the ratepayers are paying a certain amount per month into the kitty that funds basically a reward system that runs the program, the administration of it, but also the rewards that they give out to homeowners for doing
upgrades,
certain measures.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so it seems like a pretty decent program. It's been around for quite a while, I guess, now.
Yeah, and I haven't followed it very much for the last 10 years. I was very active in it for a good 7 or 8 years, and then I stopped doing that because, you know, I would have to re-educate every year and pay fees and do this and that. And
you had to pay a fee to be a consultant?
Well, I had to get certified.
Oh, right,
every
okay.
2 years, get right. recertified.
Right.
And that wasn't cheap, and it involved travel, and I had to do continuing education and conferences and that kind of thing.
So it's changing that dramatically.
Yeah. Well, actually, I don't know how focus on energy has changed since I've been out. I can see that they have. They've changed the administration, who was administering it for them, and they usually are tweaking. They're constantly tweaking their measures, their recommended measures, and how much they pay for them, and that depends on how much money they're getting and maybe some new science as to what's the biggest bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I checked their website out again last night to go over it, and they have some free packages that can start introducing people, because this, again, I keep coming back to, it's a lot of it's education.
Yeah.
You know, you just leave your lights on, you don't think about it, you just like you said earlier about the air conditioning, you just let things run. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of good information, mm-hmm. and the free packages are, if you're willing to give them all the information they're asking for, your account numbers and all that,
right.
and you can get some free goods.
Sure.
We're all different kind of people out here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what they say is they empower people and businesses to make smart energy decisions, and they seem to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that it's a pretty good program.
And the website's easy to navigate. And currently they have a lot of information on the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act.
Okay.
They direct you to that program. And then they also offer rebates that are separate from the IRA.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Glad I told you that, huh?
Yeah, well, I was wondering how their incentives may have changed with the federal programs coming in.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't checked that out yet, though.
Yeah, so, and if they're lower income people do have more opportunities, obviously.
Sure.
For rebates and things. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's a good program. If people haven't heard of it yet or have heard of it but never bothered to go to the website, I'd recommend taking a look at it.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Can't, it's like, it's just good to keep getting more information.
Yeah, and the program's there for us to use. You're paying mm-hmm. into it through your rates,
mm-hmm.
most people.
Yeah, and going back to what you've talked about earlier, like your personal interest, you know, was to reduce your own consumption. You know, sometimes we think in terms of big, broad things, and we get overwhelmed and feel like, well, nothing will ever change. Mm. But those little things that you do, I remember years ago when we talked about putting solar in, and people would give me an estimate that was off the charts. Mm. You know, it was,
mm-hmm.
it ended up being twice what most of them were, and twice of what we actually did.
Oh.
But what we did was we checked our energy levels by using a little device that we got at the public library.
Oh.
You know, and then you plug in your toaster and found out how much ridiculous $30 a month you were spending on a toaster. And it's like, you know, I don't think I need that toaster so much.
Right, right.
But to think about these things and to make these changes. So are there other sources of information that you go to or that you would recommend people go to?
These days... It didn't used to be like this, but these days, the internet has an amazing amount of information. So sometimes when I'm stumped on a particular house that I've just tested, and there's some kind of device they have that I don't know what its efficiency rating is supposed to be, or I need to know more about a particular type of device that I don't have any experience with myself. Then I will go on the internet and just look around, especially if it's a well-trusted site like the any of the federal programs, Energy Star, those kinds of, the Department of Energy.
Mm.
I would trust their stuff pretty well. And there are other ones that I don't consult very often, but that are trade organizations for heating and cooling, for example. I don't tend to get into the mechanical systems very much,
mm-hmm.
Because it just takes too much education.
Yeah.
And I just don't need to be that professional. I mean, that type of professional. That's for other people.
Mm-hmm. It's good to be able to compartmentalize what you're doing.
To some degree, especially when I don't do this on a daily basis. This is not mm-hmm. my bread and butter. So it's... for me to maintain that level of education for something that I don't use that often, mm-hmm. it's just not necessary.
Yeah, and those, the government ones, you know, I know I was looking for water heaters just not that long ago, and I was surprised that they all were directing you now to the, what's the water heater, the...
Oh, the heat pump.
Heat pump.
Yeah.
Water heater.
Yeah, and that's probably like, what I would get for my next one.
Just boom, that's right where it went.
Yeah. And, you know, I started meeting clients who have owned those now.
Mm-hmm.
And not having owned one myself, I don't have any personal experience with them. So mm-hmm. I had read up about them, but then talking with people who had owned them and hearing, okay, the basement doesn't get that much cooler. It's not that noisy. It's perfectly tolerable. It's like, okay, good. Okay, now I can recommend it more easily to people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to be getting I still sit on the fence about all these things. But sure. At the same time, I keep wanting to do whatever I can do to help
sure.
the situation that we are finding ourselves in.
You know, with that one in particular, water heaters, I'm in the situation, you talk about being on the fence. Our current water heater is from 1956. It's an electric water heater from 1956. It's got to be a record breaker.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and it's kind of a testament to the fact that we don't use it so intensely that it's going to wear out, but also it's a testament to how it was made. And I know that at some point it's going to leak and crap out, and I'll have to get something else, and I'll probably get one of those heat pump water heaters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's an interesting moment in time where we have these choices to make. And you have to look at, again, how we've been trained or educated or driven towards certain things, like larger automobiles. And I mean, I brought my Prius one time into a local mechanic, and the one mechanic looked at my car and he said, you know, basically long live gasoline. And I was like, okay, good luck with that, yeah. You know. Oil has its, you know, limitations on many levels.
Yeah.
And I think, again, we kind of touched on this earlier. I think we're starting to see the ramifications of what we've done. You know, a lot of people are using the term frontline people now. And I think a lot of people haven't heard quite what that means. But, you know, frontline people are the people where...
Who absorb the impact first and
exactly
and worst.
Where the pipelines are going through or where the mining is taking place, where the mountain's coming down
sure.
to produce your energy, these kinds of things. And it's starting to dawn on me that we're all becoming frontline people.
Yeah.
You know, with the Canadian smoke we're dealing with and
yeah.
every question really.
Yeah, imagine if every summer becomes as smoky as this one has and hotter. Continues to be hotter, and suddenly you're looking at having to buy more machines to keep your environment comfortable, and they're very expensive, and is there a better way to do this? Hopefully we'll see that there are better ways to do that.
Well, there are, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's
yeah.
the thing. You know, I think in maybe even 5 years ago, to talk like this, people would be like, oh, you're just... bringing in bad news or you're just being a downer or this
right.
or that. But I think as the realities start to creep in, and it would be nice if media helped a little bit more with that, you know?
Yeah.
They still can't, it's like, they, you know, we're entertained and then they throw in, oh, by the way, Texas is on fire, you know?
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
or the smoke is bad again, mm-hmm. watch out.
Yeah.
But the full impact of this, you know, hasn't really reached everyone.
Yeah.
So that we're frontline people.
Yeah.
We are frontline people.
Yeah, more and more.
And the relationship we have to the earth it's critical, you know?
Yeah, it is. It's everything, really. if we sever or if we damage the relationship, we're just damaging ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we've lived... for quite a while now, successfully ignoring that. And now the proverbial chickens are coming home to roost.
And luckily, not all of us have ignored it. And when I
right.
say that, I'm really thinking of the indigenous people
mm.
who are the immediate frontline people
right.
in most cases. And they have had that. They have been warning us from the very first, you know, don't be fat takers.
Right.
You know, don't... overuse,
yeah.
you know?
Or I love the Koyaanisqatsi. Do you remember that movie from the late 70s, I think? Oh, it was it's a Hopi term that means a life out of balance.
Mm.
And there was a movie made of it, John Cage, I think, music.
Mm.
Anyway,
No, beautiful. Yeah. I think this is, we need to champion these things and not feel weird about it, or because it's important.
Yeah.
I remember talking to someone back in Chicago, and he was involved with, his business was big trucks, doing big truck things, you know? Mm-hmm. And we were talking about
trucks.
It, and yeah, I was like, well, it's all good, you know, you're making a living out of it, but what about the earth? I said to him, and his response was, better the earth than me.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's like, you know what? I bet you're rethinking that.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you need to be.
Yeah.
You know, and I think we need to have that. I mean, I'm really happy to have this conversation with you today, because I was like, well, what are we going to talk about? If you didn't have this other part behind you that makes you want to do this, mm-hmm. Then it would be, we'd be done.
Yeah, yeah, right. And if my only interest were to save people money, you know, that it works tangentially, but I'd much prefer that people alter their relationship to their environment. And that includes all of us. It includes me. You know, I still drive for pleasure sometimes to go and do something that I enjoy. Mm-hmm. And that may, in the future, that may have to change to some degree.
Yeah, a lot of things might have to change.
Yeah.
But it'd be nice if we learned, if we had adapted.
Yeah.
Ahead of time.
That is the question. Will we willingly adapt?
That's the philosopher in
That's
you
right.
coming out.
Yeah.
Well, time will tell.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I certainly hope we can.
Yeah, and let's get back to the people who are really trying to make a difference here. One of the, I think, one of the most important local groups is the Vernon County Energy District, which is just a couple years old. Mm-hmm. And it's a local nonprofit that supports and is educating people towards 100% locally owned and locally produced renewable energy. That's really a wonderful thing,
yeah,
you know?
It is.
So, and you're part of that. That's how I found you. Mm-hmm. I was looking at their website, and there was David Ware, and I was like, oh, an energy consultant, let's chat. Mm-hmm. So how does that work? Do people approach Vernon County Energy District? How does that?
So, yeah, they go to get to my services through the Vernon County Energy District. They will call one of the people, whoever happens to be, I think right now it's Al Buss, mm-hmm. and to set up an appointment. And at first they had a grant to do a bunch of free energy audits. And then last year that had to change. They didn't get that grant renewed, so people had to pay. It's still paying less than market rate, and that's just because I can do it for less than market rate because I'm not trying to put
that's
kids
great.
Through college.
Yeah, there you go.
So that's basically my role there is just to do the energy consulting. I'm not on any of their subcommittees, mm-hmm. and trying to direct the direction of mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. organization. But I'm just there to support individuals in their homes mm-hmm. For their next steps and what they're trying to do to be more energy and independent and to create energy that the community can use.
Okay, talk about that. How do you create energy that the community can use?
Well, that would be conservation first, but mm-hmm. also generation. If we're going to go to alternative generations of electricity, for example, and heating, to get away from carbon, then we're going to have to produce it ourselves, and we're going to have to reduce the amount that we consume, because as far as I can tell from most of the analyses, you can't just replace carbon fuel sources with alternative fuel sources and expect to do the same amount of work. You'd have to use an awful lot of it, And then some things are just more, you know, gasoline is a very convenient fuel. So my job is to help convince people to consider putting in solar, for example, and producing more than they use. That way it gets fed into the grid and other people can use it. Wind is the same way, although not as many people around here that I've met have been going that direction. It's usually solar. Mm-hmm. And then decreasing the amount you consume is, first of all, taking on your house and just making it more efficient so that's always using less. Mm-hmm. And then behavior comes next. Mm-hmm. And that's all over the place.
But, you know, if you start doing those things that you're talking about, it does start to change your behaviors.
Yeah.
Like we eat less toast.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. When you start seeing the measurements like you were doing, oh, my goodness, that is huge.
Yeah, you don't realize. Yeah. It's just so much that we've taken for granted.
Sure.
Well, I'd like to welcome our listeners and let them know what they're hearing today on Conversations. This is WDRT. My name is Dina Eccles, and my guest this morning is David Ware, and he's a local energy consultant with Vernon County Energy District. And we're talking now a little bit about the Vernon County Energy District and using less energy, right? So getting back to that, so Vernon, if people wanted to go to that website, it's vced.energy, if they wanted to find you and say, hey, come on over, take a look at my house.
Test my house.
Tell me what I'm doing wrong or what I could do better. Okay. So, yeah, this thing, how do we encourage people to change that thinking? That you make it sound so seamless, you know? You do. You really do.
Right.
And I appreciate that because I don't hear it very often. Yeah. I talk to a lot of people, and they're all like, you know, just keep using electricity. We'll just keep putting everything in. We'll just build. Now they're talking about putting up a nuclear power plant.
Right. Yeah.
Even NPR boasts about this new possible technology.
Yeah.
Called nuclear.
Right. Cold fusion.
It's so clean.
Right.
You know? And I'm just like, wow, come on, man.
Where did that come from?
Texas is hot and not just Texas. Well, I just keep saying Texas because it's easier to pinpoint.
Sure.
And because, you know, they were so happy to have their oil in the 70s.
Exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. And now they still produce a lot of oil in Texas.
Yeah. So come on, people.
Yeah. Well, and part of that, what you're talking about, I think, is the desire we have to keep, to stay on this nice ride we're on. Mm-hmm. We're on a very energy-intensive ride, and it's very comfortable for a lot of us. It has been my whole life, and my parents experienced it. It's been a large wave of increasing energy available to us to live our lives. And to alter that, that's kind of like the river. This is a wave metaphor. Mm-hmm. You were using a river a while ago, but, you know, waves crash. They don't, there are sometimes, if they're small enough, they'll just kind of wash ashore and not create a big havoc. But if it's big enough, it's not going to be a pretty ending when it curls over and falls. So how to avoid that? That becomes the question. When we're riding so high on the wave, how do we dial the energy of that wave back and reduce the size of that wave? Not sure that metaphor works anymore, but how do we willingly reduce our impact on this planet? Because if we don't, I just can't see how it's going to look pretty 30, 40 years from now if we just keep trying to meet all of our needs with carbon fuels.
Right. And I think the other piece that you mentioned earlier about that you're not here just to help people's economic picture look brighter.
Right.
I think that that's also critical because we can sell that package, you know, your bills are going to go down. And there's a lot of people working really hard to sell that package.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it reaches everyone, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. There's a certain segment of the population that isn't running on the treadmill so fast. Some of us are spinning on that treadmill so fast that, you know, it's crazy to think about all this stuff.
Yeah. Well, there are plenty of people out there who could not afford, cannot right now, and may not in the future be able to afford to put up a solar array. And there are people who can. And so my interest is in reaching those who can and trying to reach their conscience, elevate their conscience a little bit and say, you know, what you could do with your extra money, your extra resources, is instead of just keeping it in the stock market and hoping it continues to go up and you live an even more comfortable retirement, take some of it and produce some electricity for your community. Make more than you already make and share that. And accept the fact that you made an investment in your community. It may not return you a bunch of money, mm-hmm. but it's helping the future of your community.
Yeah, you'll be happy to hear that about 12 years ago, we put up solar like that.
Good.
For that reason.
For that reason.
So
good
that
for you.
We could, and I'm still paying on it. And people always say to me, well, when will you break even? And I say, I may never.
Right.
You know, that's not the point. It was not the point when I did it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the point was showing people that we could do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And then it, you know, we have to look at one of the things that I'm really interested in right now is the fact that most of us, not everybody, I know that a lot of people in Viroqua are on XL Energy, I believe. Mm. But most of us out here are Vernon Electric Cooperative.
Sure.
And to help the Vernon Electric Cooperative kind of get with the program,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that energy comes from Dairyland Power, and Dairyland Power is the one looking at putting up another natural gas plant
sure.
in Lake Superior and mm-hmm. possibly aligning with someone to put up a nuclear power plant. You know, we need to understand that we have a say in that. Mm-hmm. As cooperative members, we're co-owners.
Yeah.
We don't have to be led around. And it's really tough because these conversations that we're having, there's very few of them happening.
Mm-hmm.
The glossies all come out touting the natural gas, touting nuclear, touting, you know, big expensive arrays, you know, and more expensive things.
Mm-hmm.
And people don't realize that it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to get this, and we're all going to have good energy, right?
Right.
Energy will never be a problem for us.
Yeah.
No, but your bill was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. Your bill for the next, you've just sentenced the next two generations
yeah.
to this same system of gasoline, long may she live.
Right, yeah, exactly.
What that guy said to me.
Sure.
Good
yeah.
luck.
Yeah, yeah, it's difficult. It's difficult, like you say, it's changing the direction of the river
mm-hmm.
or maybe the intensity of the river or something because American society and really developed societies, developed civilizations throughout this world have chosen a certain path, and fossil fuels, carbon fuels have powered that. And we're now, I think it's reasonable to say we're addicted to it. And it's pretty hard to say, I'm an addict and I'm going to go through the steps to change that, to alter my direction in life. That's a hard one. And I'm hoping that we can do that intentionally rather than waiting until the, you know what, hits the fan and then go, oh my good, what do we do now? Now we're desperate.
Right.
I don't want to see desperation. There's already desperation out there.
But
I don't want to see 99% desperation.
Right. I think the other word that comes to mind is entitlement. You know?
Yeah.
There's this entitlement.
Sure.
And I think a lot of people are realizing, you know, okay, I'm 68 years old. And I have lived in that bubble of really good fortune.
Sure.
Financially.
Yeah.
But I think younger people are reading the writing on the wall that short of us, you know, and continuing all the wars that we do just to keep bringing economic whatever to this country, they're realizing that it's not going to be the same for them. Mm-hmm. They're realizing that things have to be different. And if they aren't realizing that yet, it's going to come knocking at the door soon.
Yeah.
And that is a hope. You know, that is a hope.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, entitlement, we're entitled to, we should be entitled to good, clean air, good, clean food. Yes, a good, comfortable place to live that doesn't have to be a McMansion.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
That should be.
Yeah, the basic needs are.
And we should ensure that one, for one another that those are met.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I guess you do. That's why we're talking. This is great. I happened to catch Bernie Sanders last night talking to Fran Drescher. I don't know if you caught that.
I know of her, but I haven't really.
Yeah, she was the nanny, and now she's the president of the Actors Association.
Oh, right, yeah, yeah.
And boy, she was just, she would love this conversation. Mm. She would be like cheering us on, because she just took it on and said, you know, these people are making, I think she said that the CEO of the head of the, you know, thing that they were fighting, that was going on strike, for that he makes something like $784,000, and then she said, a day.
Oh, I was waiting for that.
Yeah,
it's like that in a year, everyone goes, oh, so what?
and she was basically pleading with these people.
Right.
You know, can you please come back to some kind of empathy? Can you come back to some kind of compassion? And that's really what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, you're going into their houses, and you're going to tell them, you're going to bring your big blower and my little
infrared camera.
Yeah, you know, like Mr. Ghostbuster with all your contraptions. But you're going to be pleading with them, you know,
yeah,
to please think about what has been done to you because you inherited this.
Mm-hmm.
And how can we possibly change it together?
Yeah.
And, you know,
yeah,
that's why I like Vernon County Energy District, because everybody I meet in that conglomerate of people, they do care.
Yeah.
They really care.
Yeah. Well, just the fact that they're volunteering their effort to change that stream of energy use in their area, that, you know, that alone says a lot. When people volunteer and they put their time in like that, that always impresses me.
Mm. Yeah, and there's a lot of really good people doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Another one is Rob Danielson from Save Our Soul, Soul of Wisconsin,
right,
his organization, and the effort that he's made. Mm. I want to give him a shout out. I'd like to have him on the radio one day too, because he's made a lot of important studies and got a lot of people thinking and changing things way back for when the transmission lines were coming through too,
right,
so that we could think about those things. Mm. So yeah, this is... this is an important conversation to have. And I hope people are listening and not just saying, yeah, yeah, a year from now or 2 years from now, because maybe there's just some little thing you could be doing. And if everybody did that one little thing,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
one little thing, it could make a difference.
It sure could.
And we don't have to believe that it won't make a difference.
No.
And that doubt is such a... If there's a human disease, I think that might be it.
Right. Yeah, yeah. Doubt. On the one hand, doubt serves a healthy purpose, because otherwise we'd be gullible.
There you go.
But there's that, the sense of, we can do this, it can be done. That's instead of, I don't think it can be done, and so we shouldn't do anything, really, because it won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I struggle with that sometimes. Maybe you can hear it in some of the things I say, but you know, whether or not we stem the tide before things get too difficult and we get desperate, That's an open question to me. I think we can, and I work toward us doing that.
And I'm so glad you do. I'm so glad you do, because if you stopped, then that would allow for the negative thing to win.
Yeah.
And we have to find community again. We have to find what our part in this big puzzle is, this big puzzle of humankind on this earth. You know, one
yes.
people, one planet.
Mm-hmm.
We have to do that. And so I'm so grateful to you for doing the work you do and caring the way you do and being part of that great organization. And you can find it, Vernon County Energy District at vced.energy. So what last things would you like to tell our listeners? Hope.
Well, one thing I'd say is that I want to thank you, Dina, for having these conversations and for offering this to our community. I think that's a wonderful thing, and that you're planting seeds. And then speaking of planting seeds, I just wanted to mention one of my favorite things that I've done other than affecting people's homes and their behavior is I planted a forest.
Oh, wow.
And it was 28 years ago now when we first moved here. So I was about 40 when I first planted them. And they're now tall enough that I had to thin out the planting that I'd done. And I've got my own woods now that I created, and it's carbon storage. It's giving the land a rest. It was just a pasture before, and an overused pasture. And now there are all these birds and butterflies and plants using this part of Earth that couldn't do it before. And I feel pretty proud of that.
Yeah, that is delicious.
Yeah.
And that's funny. I was going to ask you if you gardened. I had a feeling.
But
you garden trees.
My wife gardens. I do the forestry.
I'm a tree person.
Okay.
Yeah, every year I put in. I love it. Love
yeah.
watching them grow. This has been a tough year on those seedlings. We've had to water and water.
Oh, I'll bet.
But thank you so much. And thank you for everything you've done for the earth, even the unheralded ones or the ones that you're not getting paid for.
Right.
Those are the best. They're the best. The birds yeah. wake you up in the morning and
yeah.
say, thank you for this tree.
Yeah.
Well, very happy to have you on, Dave.
All right.
So I'd like to thank you all. I hope you enjoyed this show. I have really enjoyed and meeting a kindred spirit in my brother, Dave. Dave Ware. Look him up or think about more what you could be doing. That's the first step towards action. And have a wonderful day.
Goodbye.